All right, so we begin this news hour with a growing military standoff sparked by the crisis on Ukraine's border with Russia. US President Joe Biden is ordering the Pentagon to deploy additional troops to Eastern Europe. 2,000 American soldiers will head to Poland and Germany, and 1,000 will be repositioned to Romania. The US and NATO already have tens of thousands of troops, of course, in Europe. But Russia's president, Vladimir Putin, he says the West is trying to lure him into a war with Ukraine and insists that Moscow's concerns about NATO's expansion eastward have been ignored. Russia has amassed tens of thousands of soldiers on its border with Ukraine. UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson has said any invasion would be a disastrous miscalculation. He's due to hold a phone call with Putin later on Wednesday.
We remain focused on the evolving situation in Europe. And Russia's actions on the Ukrainian border and Belarus. As the Secretary said, the United States stands shoulder to shoulder with our NATO allies. The current situation demands that we reinforce the deterrent and defensive posture on NATO's eastern flank. President Biden has been clear that the United States will respond to the growing threat to Europe's security and stability. Our commitment to NATO, Article 5, and collective defense remains ironclad. As part of this commitment, and to be prepared for a range of contingencies, the United States will soon move additional forces to Romania, Poland, and Germany. I want to be very clear about something. These are not permanent moves. They are moves designed to respond to the current security environment. Moreover, these forces are not going to fight in Ukraine. They are going to ensure the robust defense of our NATO allies. Now, let me lay this out for you in a series of three steps. First, 1,000 soldiers that are currently based in Germany will reposition to Romania in the coming days. Now, this is a striker squadron, a mounted cavalry unit that's designed to deploy in short order and to move quickly once in place. And they will augment the some 900 U.S. forces that are currently in Romania. Now, this force is designed to deter aggression and enhance our defensive capabilities in frontline allied states. And we expect them, as I said, to move in coming days. Secretary Austin discussed this repositioning to Romania just last week in his conversation with the Romanian Minister of Defense. And again, I want to stress that this move is coming at the express invitation of the Romanian government. Additionally, we welcome French President Macron's announcement that France intends to deploy forces to Romania under NATO command, which Secretary Austin discussed with the French Defense Minister, Florence Parly, just last week. The United States will continue to consult and coordinate with France and all our allies to ensure that we complement each other in our respective deployments. And, of course, we're going to continue to work through NATO to make appropriate defensive and non-escalatory force posture alignments. Second, we are moving an additional force of about approximately 2,000 troops from the United States to Europe in the next few days. The 82nd Airborne Division is deploying components of an infantry brigade combat team and key enablers to Poland, and the 18th Airborne Corps is moving a joint task force-capable headquarters to Germany. Now, both of them, as you know, are based in Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Collectively, this force is trained and equipped for a variety of missions to deter aggression and to reassure and to defend our allies. Not surprisingly, we worked very closely with our Polish and German allies to set the stage for these movements, and we absolutely appreciate their support. Again, these are not permanent moves. They respond to current conditions. We will adjust our posture as those conditions evolve. Third, and finally, all of these forces are separate and in addition to the 8,500 personnel in the United States on heightened alert posture that I announced last week. Those 8,500 are not currently being deployed, but remain ready to move if called for the NATO response force or as needed for other contingencies as directed by the Secretary or by President Biden. We continue to review our force posture and the situation in Europe, and we will make adjustments as the situation warrants. I also want to take this opportunity to correct some misconceptions around last week's announcement NATO as an organization does not have veto power over U.S. Troop deployments, and media reports to the contrary represent a mischaracterization of that. Nothing precludes the United States from making its own decisions on force movements, including those forces that are being placed on heightened readiness. That said, any movement of U.S. forces involves consultation with the host nation, as we have done with Romania and Poland and Germany prior to today's announcements. And we're mindful of the competing needs of operational security and our obligation to be transparent, and we'll provide you additional information on these and other movements as available and as appropriate. As we have long said, we are continuously reviewing our posture, so there may soon be additional posture decisions to announce, including movements that are part of ongoing military exercises. This is not the sum total of the deterrence actions we will take or those to reassure our allies. I think it won't surprise you, we take a theater-wide approach to deterrence and defense, and we welcome the additional announcements by Spain, Denmark, the UK, and the Netherlands of their consideration to deploy additional forces to reinforce NATO's eastern flank. The United States has robust capabilities distributed across Europe, including in the Baltic region, and we will continue to assess needs in that area in cooperation with the relevant allies and, of course, the full NATO alliance. We stand united. We have said that repeatedly. We say it again today. These movements are unmistakable signals to the world that we stand ready to reassure our NATO allies and deter and defend against any aggression. Now, as the Secretary said Friday, we do not know if Russia has made a final decision to further invade Ukraine, but it clearly has that capability. The Department of Defense will continue to support diplomatic efforts led by the White House and the State Department to press for resolution. We do not believe conflict is inevitable. The United States, in lockstep with our allies and partners, has offered Russia a path to de-escalate. But we will take all prudent measures to assure our own security and that of our allies. Now, finally, just one note. I note that in the past few hours, a proposal made by the United States leaked to a European news outlet. We did not make this document public. But now that it is, it confirms to the entire world what we have always been saying. There is no daylight between our public statements and our private discussions. NATO and its partners are unified in their resolve and open to constructive and serious diplomacy. The United States has gone the extra mile to find a diplomatic solution. And if Russia actually wants to negotiate a solution, as it claims it does, this document certainly makes clear that there is a path forward to do so. And with that, we'll take questions, starting with you, Lita.
Hi, John. Thanks. A couple details on some of this. Is it still 8,500 total that are on prepared to deploy orders, or are there additional ones? And there's a brigade at Fort Carson that already is scheduled to rotate into Europe. Are you including them? There's been some confusion. Are you including that Carson brigade in the prepared to deploy orders? Or are they completely separate because they're an already scheduled deployment? And then are these troops that are going, are they under NATO, or are these all unilateral U.S. moves? Thank you.
Let me see if I can remember all those. The troops that I'm talking about today will be going under U.S. command. But as I said, in the case of Romania, we know the French are going to be preparing to deploy troops there. We will find ways to complement that force presence, again, in full consultation with Romania. So I wouldn't describe these as unilateral moves. I mean, this is a bilateral arrangement between the United States and Romania. But to your question, they will be going under U.S. command. The 8,500, they still remain on prepare to deploy orders. As I said, when I talked about it last Monday, the vast majority of them are designed for the NATO response force. As I said in my opening statement, that force has not been activated, so they aren't going anywhere. The Secretary has, as you might imagine, as we have worked towards these troop movements, there have been additional forces put on prepare to deploy orders or shorten tethers. I'm not prepared to go into great detail today about that. But yes, there have been additional ones. And as I said in my opening statement, you can expect that that could continue to happen going forward. We're going to constantly look at the conditions in the region and consult with allies and partners. And if we feel we need to make additional forces more ready, we'll do that. If we feel that we need to send more forces to certain eastern flank countries, we'll do that too, in full consultation with NATO and in full consultation with the specific allies and partners. And I think I missed one of your questions, Lita.
Well, I just want to clarify.
I'm going to have to take that one, Lita, because I don't have the breakdown of every single unit in that original 8,500 in front of me. So let me just take that rather than speculate and guess, Jen.
John, do you have any evidence that Putin plans to move beyond Ukraine's borders? Why are you bolstering these eastern flank allies if you do not have evidence of that?
Because it's important that we send a strong signal to Mr. Putin and, frankly, to the world that NATO matters to the United States. It matters to our allies. And we have ironclad Article 5 commitments. An attack on one is an attack on all. And so we know that he also bristles at NATO, about NATO. He has made no secret of that. We are making it clear that we're going to be prepared to defend our NATO allies if it comes to that. Hopefully it won't come to that. Nobody wants to see, as I said, conflict's not inevitable. There's no reason for there to be armed conflict in Ukraine or anywhere else on the European continent. And Mr. Putin can go a long way to serving that end by taking seriously the proposals that we have put forward diplomatically and by de-escalating through moving some of those troops away.
But is there any evidence that he plans to—that anything you're seeing that suggests those troops that are outside Ukraine might carry on to Poland, Romania?
What we see, Jen, is clear evidence every day that he continues to destabilize the environment by adding more forces in the western part of his country and along Belarus, in addition to additional naval activity in the Mediterranean and the North Atlantic. So he clearly is providing himself many options, lots more capabilities. For exactly what purpose, we don't know right now. And because we don't know exactly what his purpose is, we want to make sure we're ready on the NATO front to defend our allies. Barbara.
I want to follow up on Jen's question. You said at the beginning, the current situation demands we reinforce. So what specifically demands the reinforcement that you are laying out today? And the reason I ask this, this is bilateral, as you said. Originally, you spoke at length several days ago about the NATO Response Force. They have not activated that. You are moving ahead bilaterally, not under a NATO umbrella anyhow. So what signal does that send that you're not waiting for a NATO vote? And what is the current situation that demands this reinforcement outside of Russia, outside of Ukraine? I don't think I heard a specific answer.
I think the signal it sends that we're moving additional U.S. forces into allied territory at the request and with the invitation of those countries is that we take our NATO commitments very, very seriously. And I put that right in the opening statement. And as for, I think your question is sort of why now?
I'd like an explanation why you're doing this now without the vote at NATO, which does not appear readily apparent for them to activate the response force. What has led you to say, okay, the United States will act on a bilateral basis? You have the invitations. You could have waited for a NATO vote. You decided not to. So what is the
It's not just us, Barb. Other nations, and I mentioned Denmark, the UK, France. I mean, other nations, other NATO nations are likewise discussing in bilateral ways with eastern flank nations the addition of forces and capabilities to those nations. So it's not just the United States. It's other NATO allies that are doing this. And you talk about this vote thing. Let's be clear. What I think you're getting at is the NATO Response Force. That's a 40 1,000-person strong force that is designed for high readiness. That is a decision that the alliance and only the alliance can make. We have a contribution to that. We have gotten those forces alerted to be ready to go if needed, and they still will be. We also can, if the president decides, as commander-in-chief, to take some of those alerted forces and move them in a bilateral arrangement as well, he can do that. As I said at the top, it's not like the alliance has a veto authority on any of those troops that were put on prepare to deploy. But in terms of why now, here's just a couple of factors. Mr. Putin continues to add forces, combined arms, offensive capabilities, even over just the last 24 hours. He continues to add in Western Russia and in Belarus, and again, as I said, in the Mediterranean and the North Atlantic. He has shown no signs of being interested or willing to de-escalate the tensions. And it's not just the United States that's noticed this. Our NATO allies have noticed this. And we have been in constant communication and consultation with them, and they have expressed their concerns. We have shared our perspectives on what we're seeing with them. They have shared their perspectives on what they're seeing with us. And as a result of these bilateral discussions, we are now prepared to make these moves. I say again, two things. These are temporary moves, not permanent deployments, not, you know, permanent basing. And two, we're not ruling out the possibility that there will be more coming up in future days and weeks.
So my last question, the bottom line here is you cannot, the United States, the Pentagon, the White House, you right now could not rule out the possibility that Putin could make a move outside of Ukraine into an East European country that's friendly with NATO, friendly with the U.S., an ally. You can't rule out that he's going to make an additional move beyond Ukraine.
We're not ruling anything in or out with this announcement, Barb. This isn't about making this. This isn't about an intel assessment about what Mr. Putin will or won't do. As I said again in my opening statement, we still don't believe he's made a decision to further invade Ukraine. And if he does further invade Ukraine, obviously there's going to be consequences for that. But he has many options and capabilities available to him as to how he might do that. And we simply don't know. We want to make sure that he knows any move on NATO is going to be resisted, and it's going to trigger Article 5, and we're going to be committed to the defense of our allies. And that's what this is all about. Yeah, David.
When President Biden previewed this last week, he said he'd be sending forces in the near term. He also said not a lot. Do you consider 3,000 not a lot? And how does 1,000, how do 1,000 troops, infantry troops, stop the kind of force that you've been describing that Russia has been amassing in Western Russia and Belarus?
We think that these orders that the Secretary is giving today are very much in keeping with the president's comments. And to your other question, I remind again that we hold the option open of additional force movements if that's desired and needed. So the steps I'm talking about today could very well be preliminary steps to future ones that we might take. And to your other question about, you know, is that enough? Again, I think it's worth reminding that Romania, as a sovereign state, has their own military and a very capable one at that. And it's not just the United States sending a striker squadron. As I mentioned earlier, the French are going to be sending additional troops. I'll let them speak to what they're going to do and on what timeline and how much. And as I also said in my opening statement, other countries are likewise moving forward to provide bolstering capabilities to NATO allies on the eastern flank.
How long will it take these troops to get in position? And do you expect the infantry combat team from Fort Bragg to jump in?
I'm not going to talk about the specifics of their movement. But as I said in my opening statement, we expect them to start moving in coming days. I don't have a more specific timeline for you in terms of exact departure date and exact arrival. Obviously, it'll be obvious when they get there, and certainly we'll try to keep you informed all the way, Court.
Thank you.
I just want to say, you've made it clear several times that these troops won't be brought into Ukraine and that they won't be in combat. But can you rule out that any of these troops, specifically some from the 82nd Airborne, might be brought into Ukraine in the coming days to help with a non-combatant evacuation? Is that possible that they could be used for that?
As I think you heard the secretary say on Friday, our troops are multi-mission capable, and they will be prepared for a range of contingencies, and I won't go any further than that.
Is that one reason, though, that the 82nd specifically was identified as one of the units to go forward early? Is that because of that capability, because they have the power?
They are, as you know, already a ready force. They are already at a heightened state of alert. That's the raison d'etre for that force, and they are multi-mission capable. They can do a lot of things. It's a very versatile force, and I think their versatility, their ability to move quickly and to conduct a range of missions across a range of contingencies, which is well proven, that's the reason why the secretary has ordered them to go. Okay? Let me get to, I promise I'll get to everybody, but I haven't done, other than Lita, I haven't done anybody on the phone, and I need to do that. Sylvie?
Hello, thank you. I would like to know how many soldiers you are going to send to Poland, because you said 2,000 from US to Germany and Poland. So how many soldiers will you have in Poland all in all?
The majority of the 2,000 that will be moving from Fort Bragg will be going to Poland. The 18th Airborne Corps, as I said in my opening statement, that's going to Germany, that they are going to form a joint task force headquarters. And that's usually, depending on the need and the task at hand, several hundred people. So the majority of the 2,000 that I mentioned that comprise the 82nd Airborne Brigade Combat Team, that leading element, they'll be going to Poland. Kelly from News Nation.
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my question. I know you said we will adjust this posture as conditions evolve. I was curious because we're seeing, you know, ordinary Ukrainians, teachers, moms, dads, dentists learning to use guns to defend themselves. There are calls in Washington for the Pentagon to support them. Are any of these troops going to help them? And how will the president's order change the mission of the Florida National Guard troops currently in Ukraine?
As I said at the top, Kelly, the president's been clear, and I think we made it eminently clear in my opening statement. These troops will not be going to Ukraine to participate in the defense of Ukraine. The president has been very clear about that. These forces are going to reassure and to bolster capabilities inside NATO's eastern flank. And as for the Florida National Guard trainers, they are still in Ukraine. There's been no decision to change their status. They are still there providing advice and assist to Ukrainian armed forces. And if and when there's a need to make a different decision about their presence there, the secretary will absolutely do that in consultation with the European Command Commander, General Walters, but no decision has been made yet. Tony Capaccio.
Hey, John, when you said it'll be obvious that the 82nd Airborne arrives, I want to piggyback on David Martin's question. Is it likely they're going to parachute in as a symbolic drop to send a message to Putin?
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about their travel there and how they're going to arrive. I don't anticipate it will be a tactical operation in that regard, though, Tony. David, I said I don't expect it's going to be some sort of tactical operation, but I don't have additional information today about that. Wait, quite frankly, I'm not sure that that's all that relevant. They're going, and they're going to bolster our capabilities in NATO, and that's the most important part here.
Relevant or not, you just seem to say no. Did you say no?
David, I didn't say no. I said I don't expect that there'll be some sort of tactical operation here.
Command these troops? Is it General Walters? And is that splitting his role for this?
Well, he already has a split role as a Supreme Allied Commander in Europe. Ultimately, he will be the top of the chain of command for them while they're in Europe. I don't have, I don't have more additional information about the C2 arrangement right now, but we can get that. Let me go back to the phones here. Tara Kopp. Nothing heard. Carla Babb.
Hey, thanks for doing
this. Sorry, John. I'm on. I didn't mute myself. Can you talk about whatever additional airlift capacity might be needed to shift these troops and what role Air Mobility Command would play in this?
I don't have specifics on the airlift here, Tara. Obviously, this is a reasonable amount of forces that Air Mobility Command will be able to transport. I don't foresee there a need for some sort of surge of airlift activity to get these folks over there. Go ahead.
That is the scene at the Pentagon. Press Secretary John Kirby confirming further troop deployment to Europe and within Europe, 1,000 repositioning to Romania to augment some 900 U.S. troops already in Romania. France, he said, also intends to deploy troops to Romania. 2,000 troops from the United States will go to Europe from the 82nd Airborne Division, he said. OK, let's go straight to our White House correspondent now, Kimberly Halkett. And Kimberly, Mr. Kirby also emphasising U.S. forces will not fight in Ukraine, will ensure the robust defence of our allies, said Mr. Kirby.
Yeah, I think it was important to note some of the critical questions that came right at the outset of that Q&A period immediately following the Pentagon spokesperson's statements. And it indicates a couple of things. Number one, the war fatigue that exists in the United States. The questions that we're hearing from reporters are very different than we would have heard 20 years ago. There was no challenging 20 years ago of the narrative. Now you're hearing reporters saying, why now? What seems to be triggering this deployment of troops? What intelligence is there that would suggest that these Eastern flank NATO partners are at risk in some way? And there didn't seem to be a good answer to that question. And so that's why you heard a number of reporters taking another pass at it, trying to get some clarification on it, unsuccessfully. What we heard from the Pentagon there was the sort of stock answer that was in his initial statement, and that was that the United States is watching the movements of Russia very carefully, and they don't like what they see. They're acting on the invitation of the NATO countries, and that they will not be in any way activated inside of Ukraine, but instead will be working at a sort of with the host nations where they will be positioned. We should point out in Germany, there already is a very large presence of U.S. forces at bases there, and there is already a NATO base where these troops will now be going in the cases of Poland as well as Romania. So what we should note in all of this is the questions are critical. Another question that was brought up is, why are you jumping the gun, so to speak, with respect to the fact that NATO has not exactly had a vote yet with regard to this activating the NATO response force, and yet you're already moving these troops? Because once again, the Pentagon spokesperson keeps saying that the United States is responding to Russian aggression, but many could argue that by positioning these troops, that this is an aggressive or at least provocative act on the part of the United States, acting in advance of any NATO vote to trigger a reactive force would also be considered potentially, depending on what side of this conflict you're on, could also be seen as provocative or aggressive. And so it's very important to look at both sides of this perspective. And what's interesting, I think, most of all, is as someone who's covered conflict in the United States for 20 years or more now, is that reporters are asking these questions in a way we would not have seen 20 years ago.
Yeah, plenty of questions. What about at the government level? Will there be broad congressional support for this?
already there is. We should point out that particularly in the U.S. Senate, there is, and this I should point out is bipartisan, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, there is a healthy majority, I would say, in the U.S. Senate that is already drafting legislation to counter Russian aggression. And there are good reasons why. There, you have to remember that there are people that are still angry about the meddling in the 2016 U.S. election that many believe cost their party the White House, and they're looking to settle scores with respect to that. But they also believe that there is ongoing monitoring of U.S. systems, whether it be through backdoor espionage and cyber attacks. The attacks haven't stopped, and so on Capitol Hill, there is grave concern that Russia continues to meddle in U.S. affairs. And they are concerned about the activities that are taking place that were described by the spokesperson there at the Pentagon. And so they are watching this carefully. But again, it comes down to the imminence of the threat at this particular moment. The threats from Russia are nothing new overall. What these reporters are trying to zero down on is what makes this particular activation of troops, these 3,000 that U.S. President Joe Biden has activated or at least is now positioning as of the last couple of hours, what makes this imminent now? What is necessary now that wasn't needed, say, 2 weeks ago? And that question has not yet been answered.
All right, Kimberly, thanks for that for the time being. Kimberly Huckett there in Washington, D.C. Let's get the view from Moscow. Dorsa Jabari is standing by there. And Dorsa, early days yet, but any comment, any response?
Yes, we've actually just been hearing from the first deputy head of the Foreign Affairs Committee here from the Duma, the MP by the name of Dmitry Novikov. He's reacted very quickly in saying that this is an absolutely destructive step and not only complicates the situation at the moment, but also makes things in Ukraine very complicated. He also went on to say that these actions can also be qualified as an attempt to hack the fragile negotiation process that are ongoing about the security guarantees this country is looking for from the Americans. So it appears that the Russians are already seeing this as a very much step backwards and an attempt by the American government to really cut off or delay any kind of negotiations that they have ongoing with this country. There was a lot of talk about the diplomatic efforts that were underway over the past 3 weeks, but it appears this move now will only make things much worse. We are waiting still for President Vladimir Putin to speak to his British counterpart, Boris Johnson, later this evening, and we will get a briefing from the Kremlin about how that call goes down. But of course, this will likely be at the very top of that conversation. The Russian president has been very clear that the Americans are using Ukraine as a tool to put pressure and isolate Russia, and that is something this country is not accepting. They say they have very specific demands from NATO and the U.S., and those demands have been basically ignored by the American government up to now, and that the dialogue that is ongoing, there's very little in terms of a solution that the Russian president can see a way out of. But he said we must still continue to try the diplomatic route after he met with Hungarian Prime Minister earlier on Tuesday. So we've heard initial reaction from the Duma official, but we are going to hear from the Russian president later this evening when his phone call finishes with Boris Johnson, and the Kremlin will brief us. And certainly this announcement will play very much at the forefront of that.
I'm sure it will. Dorsa, for the time being, thanks very much. Dorsa Jabari there in Moscow. Let's talk more about that upcoming phone call. Rory Challens is standing by for us in London. Rory, as Dorsa was just saying, British Prime Minister scheduled to have this phone call with Vladimir Putin at some point in the coming hours. What's just happened perhaps puts a somewhat different emphasis, complexion on what they'll talk about.
Well, I think, I mean, it shows that the diplomacy continues. It hasn't stopped. And even though we have these troop movements, deployments, obviously the large number of Russian soldiers poised on the Ukrainian border, all of them essentially are diplomatic tools. They are threats that you can use, warnings that you can use in order for the politicians to talk out what their goals and their aims really are. And that's what Boris Johnson and Vladimir Putin are going to be doing when they speak later on. Now, will this move the diplomatic needle in any particular direction? Will it ease the situation? We'll have to see. But the indications are from the Russian side recently, they don't hold British diplomacy in particularly high regard at the moment. And of course, Boris Johnson is going through his domestic upheavals at the moment, mired in scandal over Partygate. You can only imagine really how that's going down in the Kremlin. Vladimir Putin probably having a good old chuckle about his British counterpart's woes at the moment, and probably thinking that there's no way that he would ever get himself in such a pickle, given his control over Parliament, over the judiciary, over the police and over the media in Russia, a very different political system. From the UK perspective, you have obviously a collection of different values and interests that are at play here. On the values ledger, you have the British trying to show that they are a bold and important part of the free world, that they are foreign policy actors, that Brexit hasn't diminished Britain, it's enhanced its ability to act. Interests you have, well, the UK is trying to bolster its relations with the United States. It's trying to bolster its relations with countries like Poland, Ukraine and the Baltic states. And it's trying to stand up for a young democracy against a bigger neighbour, an autocratic neighbour. We can hear Boris Johnson articulating some of these views right now.
We stand with the people of Ukraine, and we stand for the sovereign and territorial integrity of Ukraine at a very difficult time, because there are on the borders of Ukraine, as everybody knows, about 125,000 Russian troops massing. The situation is very perilous, and the job of the UK is to lead the West in bringing together the most important countries in creating a package of economic sanctions that will deter President Putin from what I believe would be a disastrous miscalculation.
You heard it from Boris Johnson. The job of the UK is to lead the Western world. Now, there is also another lens that you can look at this through, and that's the domestic political lens. Of course, Boris Johnson, as I mentioned, mired in scandal at home. Any kind of issue that he can lean into that might give a distraction to those domestic woes, he's going to do that. And, of course, a big crisis in Ukraine is a good opportunity.
Indeed, Rory, thanks for that. Rory Challenger in London.